Mitt Romney takes Wisconsin's GOP presidential primary. Fake Democrats enter the state's recall primaries. And President Obama and Paul Ryan exchange budget jabs. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, April the 6th. We'll discuss these issues and other top national and state news during this edition of The Week in Review. We have two guests with us from different political viewpoints to talk with you about the news of the week. If you would like to join in with a comment about one of our topics, or if you'd like to bring up an issue from the news this week that was especially important to you, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Very happy to have with us Peg Lautenschlager, an attorney with the firm of Bauer and Bach and former Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Also with us, Chris Lotto, a Republican campaign consultant and former communications director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy and Peg.
Good morning, Chris.
Good to have you both with us. Well, let's just talk about the lead story in NPR News just before we started here about the economy and the jobs report. It says here, employers pulled back sharply on hiring last month, a reminder that the U.S. economy may not be growing fast enough to sustain robust job growth. It says that the economy added 120,000 jobs in March, and that's down from more than 200,000 jobs in each of the previous 3 months. So, Chris Lotto, what does that say to you?
Well, you know, earlier this week there was a report about unemployment claims hitting a four-year low. There are some signs of life in the economy, and that's obviously a good thing, but it's not all rosy, as the report this morning shows, that the number of jobs being added was well below expectations. I think all this begs the question of why is the unemployment rate and some of these indicators falling fairly quickly, while overall economic growth indicators are really only showing modest gains and falling below expectations. You know, looking around this week and kind of reading up on this issue, the Federal Reserve Board chairman, hypothesized recently that a lot of companies may have overfired during the recession, and now that there are a few signs of improvement, they're rushing to rehire. But once they balance out their workforce, then what happens? Are we going to see another flood of folks rushing to look for work again after giving up for a while? So this is all going to affect future numbers and remains to be seen. You know, also, Americans' income is actually falling once inflation is accounted for. People are saving less money now. There is still a concern about underemployment. So claims are dropping. That doesn't really tell the whole story. And clearly with the numbers this morning, you know, we're not out of the woods yet. In talking about the Republican budget proposal this week, even the president acknowledged that, you know, after the election this November, the economy is still going to be in a precarious state. There's going to be a lot of Americans still looking for work and still lacking financial security. So we clearly have a long way to go.
Yeah, the unemployment rate fell to 8.2%, the lowest since January of 2009. The rate dropped, though, because fewer people are searching for jobs. Peg, what do these numbers say to you?
Well, I don't disagree with anything Chris has said for the most part. I do think that, you know, it has been a groggy up and down recovery. I mean, I think that generally the line is going in the correct direction, but it isn't going as quickly as we as Americans would like to see. And it's also going in a way where there are these odd fluctuations among a number of the statistics we use as standards for measure. I do think, though, what begs the question is the broader picture, which defines the two parties, and that is, does this recovery get enhanced so it's more meaningful in a way where we are looking at what the Republicans call the so-called job creators by looking at more tax breaks, being economically frugal or the like, or do we look at a program that's been espoused by more progressive economists, folks like the Paul Krugmans of the world and the like, who essentially are saying, hey, you know, what we are seeing in this so-called recovery is an increase in income disparity to the point that we have in some ways eliminated our consumption class. And as a result, we don't have a class of people who can afford to consume, who can afford to keep the economy moving. And indeed, you know, Chris pointed it out earlier that, the people who are buying are often buying it are often buying using loans and increasing debt. And is that the way we do this? I think the big question, it's sort of a chicken and egg thing, comes first, which is, if we have the jobs, are they meaningful enough that we're going to have a consumer class that's able to afford to buy, or are we, simply increasing that income disparity, which is doing nothing to enhance the economy overall?
Yeah, the president, when he criticized Paul Ryan's or the Republicans' budget this week, not only did he say it was social Darwinism, but he did say that the Republicans wanted to slash spending that was important to our economic recovery, like in education and training and infrastructure. Chris, your thoughts on that?
Well, the president was engaging in some pretty overheated rhetoric this week on a number of issues, including the House GOP budget plan, including the Obamacare arguments before the Supreme Court, which is something I'm sure we'll be touching on here at some point. I think really this week has been all about Obama recognizing that Republicans are starting to come together around a nominee. It's time to draw the battle lines, and election season has arrived. It's striking, too, because the Obama administration really has failed to put together any solution to address the nation's long-term debt. And that brings us one step closer to becoming Greece with every passing day. You know, the president has ignored the recommendations of his own debt reduction commission. His budget recently, missed that mark by about $2 trillion. This is a president that on the economy has dug a massive hole and has yet to display any of the leadership needed to get the U.S. out of that hole. CBS News recently reported, the national debt has increased more under 3 years of Obama than it did under 8 years of Bush. Obama has increased every American's share of the national debt by more than $16,000. I mean, this is a massive hole, and it's not getting smaller. And these are not signs of a president that takes the U.S. economic crisis seriously and is not willing to work with the other side on a solution.
Peg?
Well, I think that the president takes the U.S. economic crisis seriously. He just doesn't agree with the Republicans' approach to doing it. This notion of increasing tax cuts for the very wealthy, increasing tax cuts to business, didn't work. It didn't work during Bush when we saw our economic crisis created, when we saw national debt accrue again, which it hadn't under Clinton. And I think for all too long he has been trying to juggle in a way that keeps conservatives happy and addresses some of their concerns while recognizing that the disparity that's existing, that the engineering that's being done is creating, the engineering being done by conservatives, I might say, is indeed worsening the situation and not bettering it. What I see this week happening was the president finally defining in his message in a way that takes on this other side of opinion rather than simply, as I believe he's done in the past, occasionally kowtowing to it in order to try to, reach some kind of common agreement. And I think what we're seeing is it's about time. Again, you keep looking at those disparity numbers. You keep looking at people who are being given the tax breaks who really aren't creating any jobs despite the tax breaks they've been given. And, and that the jobs that are being created are ones like we've seen in a lot of companies in Wisconsin, $10 an hour, no benefit jobs. If you work like that for a year or two, maybe we'll give you some benefits or up your wage to $12 an hour. Those aren't the kinds of things that point to an economic recovery. Those aren't the kinds of jobs that are going to create not just a sustainable economy, but sustainable communities.
Let me bring a caller in to this conversation, Paul in Menominee Falls. Hello, Paul.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to know if your guest could comment about Paul Ryan. Here's someone has taken over $1 million from the insurance and the health industry, as well as somebody that we've learned was raised on Social Security, even saved the money and went to college on it. And now he's looking to kind of dismantle it as we know it. Right. And it seems kind of hypocritical, but I would appreciate if your guest could comment on that.
Well, Chris, do you have any comment on that?
I'm sorry, you broke up. Joy, were you speaking to me?
Yes, I asked if you had any comment on our caller's concern thinking that Paul Ryan is trying to dismantle programs that he benefited from.
No, not really. I mean, Paul Ryan was elected to represent his district. He has ascended to a position of a real authority in Washington. He is looking for a way to dig us out of this fiscal mess. and has put forward a serious budget to get that done. He's frankly doing his job in Washington. And we're going to disagree with the particulars, but I think, with President Obama's comments this week, he has indicated that, at least at this stage of the game, he's not looking to work with the other side, and the battle lines have been drawn.
Yeah, and Paul Ryan was criticizing President Obama for doing nothing to fix what he was calling this economic crisis that was coming upon us, the $15 trillion debt. Your thoughts on what the criticism of Paul Ryan of President Obama?
Well, I mean, I think that many of these folks don't understand that we are creating quickly a sort of underground society with people who do not enjoy the things which we have somehow hypothesized indeed exists. We're creating situations where families have to live with other families. We're creating situations where people don't get health care and then end up in emergency rooms at a cost that is far greater based on both progression of diseases or problems, medical problems they have, as well as the fact that it's not the most appropriate care delivery system. We are creating a culture in which so many kids are not going to school anymore. They're barely going to school or they're dropping out. We need to assess, frankly, not just what the degree of our debt is, but how our society looks today. And I think that we are overlooking a large group of people, unfortunately, most of whom don't vote, who are becoming kind of this underclass. And by doing so, I think we create a divisiveness that's going to be even greater than it is now in the future.
Another call, related but different topic. Laverne in Monroe. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good program. Good morning, guest. I favor President Obama over Paul Ryan. I think what Paul Ryan is trying to do is make the trickle down theory even worse by having a two bracket system on taxes. Rather than paying 35%, he wants to take it down to 25% and a 10% bracket. That's going to make a class war with that we're getting even worse. That's what I believe.
Yeah, all right. Well, Laverne, thanks very much. I think Laverne also wanted to bring up that he believes Paul Ryan would be a poor choice for vice president. And so let me put that particular claim out there. Chris Lotto, what do you think of Paul Ryan's chances of being selected as Mitt Romney's running mate?
Well, it's still a little ways off. I think Ryan would be a very strong choice. He's certainly embraced as a leading Republican in Congress, and Wisconsin shows signs of being a battleground state this year, and Ryan could obviously have a positive impact here. Some Republicans really wanted Paul Ryan to run for president. He ultimately decided not to do that, but it's always possible that he may get the next best thing this year. Folks on the left have taken Paul Ryan as a lightning rod, and I think that for Republicans, Paul Ryan is has a real vision, is not afraid to stick his neck out and propose things that not everybody likes, and that's clear from your last couple of callers here, that he's proposing some bold visions, some bold ideas, and these are the kinds of things that we need to do to get the spending under control and to start addressing the debt and reducing the burden that every American faces right now that's only growing. So I think Paul Ryan would be an excellent choice. You're going to see a lot of, I think, trial balloons here in the coming weeks from the Romney campaign. You're going to see a lot of names floating around, and there could well be somebody out there that nobody's been talking about that's a possible vice presidential candidate. So it'll be interesting. There'll be a lot of chatter in the coming weeks, and Paul Ryan will certainly be in the mix.
Yeah, well, another name we heard bantied about this week was UW-Milwaukee governmental affairs professor Mordecai Lee, a former state lawmaker, thought that Governor Walker would have an even better chance as being picked as Mitt Romney's running mate than Paul Ryan. What do you think of that, Peg?
Well, it's interesting because I think both of them are indeed lightning rods, and I don't think that the GOP is smart, and I don't think a candidate like Romney, who is, you know, tends to try to be all things to all people, it appears, is going to look at a lightning rod type candidate in a state like Wisconsin. I think, you know, for the grown-ups in the room, the incredible divide that is taking place, particularly in a state like Wisconsin, is something they want to avoid, and as a result of that, finding the lightning rods, finding the folks who, as Chris describes, as having bold visions, and I'd say out of the mainstream visions would perhaps be more appropriate, and, although they are indeed bold, is the route that someone like a Mitt Romney is going to take. I could see a Jim or a Rick Santorum doing something like that, but I just don't see that Romney in the end is going to want somebody who takes a state like Wisconsin, which has that divide. The only reason I can see him doing something like that is if he's still concerned about pulling in the extreme right during the an election year and a general election. But you know, I think that indeed, you know, this much touted Etch-a-Sketch thing is what's going to drive the day. I do think that if you look at a Paul Ryan, he's certainly ahead of a Sarah Palin as a running mate pick. Walker, I don't know where you put him, but I just don't see that that a candidate like Romney, who has for his entire political career tried to be all things to all people, would take one of two individuals from a state divided, and both of whom have become those lightning rods on one side of that divide.
We will take a short pause. We'll continue talking about the top news of the week. We'll talk more about the results of the Wisconsin primary and Mitt Romney's win in Wisconsin, and also the latest in recall politics in Wisconsin as our Week in Review continues. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Peg Lautenschlager and Chris Lotto. Our number, if you'd like to join in, is 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This week on Here and Now on Wisconsin Public Television, recall candidates Tom Barrett and Kathleen Vinehout will discuss their campaigns for governor. Also, political scientist Mordecai Lee will weigh in on the recall elections and will analyze fallout of Wisconsin's presidential primary. That's Here and Now with Frederica Freiberg tonight at 7:30 on Wisconsin Public Television. I'm Joy Cardine. This is our regular Friday Week in Review, talking with Peg Lautenschlager and Chris Lotto today about the top political news stories of the week. We'll be getting into recall politics in Wisconsin in just a bit. But first, let's recap the Wisconsin primary too. Mitt Romney defeats Rick Santorum. Chris Lotto, is this it? Is Mitt Romney going to be the nominee for the Republican Party?
Yeah, fat lady isn't singing, but she's warming up, as the cliche goes. I don't think it's a huge surprise that that he won. I think it's become increasingly clear that Mitt Romney will be the nominee. It was nice to see Wisconsin play a role in determining that, but at this point, I think the outcome is all but inevitable. We're at the halfway point right now in the primary season, and Mitt Romney is more than halfway to the number of delegates that he would need to clinch the nomination. And, you know, the Badger State has proven that it's relevant so far this year. Obviously, we have a lot more to come with the recall elections. I think it sets up the potential that we will play a pretty valuable role in presidential politics this fall. But what we've seen, and I've discussed this before on your program, Joy, is that, you know, the Republican race this year has been a series of kind of flavors of the week. And Rick Santorum was the latest and really did the best. I think his longevity in this race to date has been pretty remarkable, and I think it's a sign that, frankly, there is still a number of Republicans that are not totally thrilled with the idea of Mitt Romney as the party nominee. I think that's obvious, but the old saying goes that Democrats fall in love and Republicans fall in line. And Wisconsin shows that Republicans are falling in line behind Mitt Romney.
Peg, do you have thoughts on
how do I disagree with that? You know, the one thing I do question is I wonder if the reason Santorum had that greater longevity was simply because Republican voters looking for, you know, the conservative out there who is going to fit their every need, they were just exhausted by this long-time search where every week there was a different person. And somehow he just ended up being, you know, the standing survivor. But, you know, I think, you know, what's tragic, I think for not just the Republican Party, but for the country, is that we still see at this late point in time leftovers of what we saw 4 years ago, which is a Republican Party trying to define itself and not quite knowing where to come up, and trying to deal with all of these factions in a way that they can find the one perfect candidate who probably doesn't exist, in part because the goals of the various factions sometimes run counter to one another. You know, this historically is, I think Chris points out, is something where the Democrats have usually struggled. But, you know, we've not seen it from the Republican Party in decades, and it's interesting to watch from outside. I'm not sure that I'd want to be inside being a participant in it.
A call from Diane in Prairie du Sac. Hello, Diane.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call. You know, the newspapers and the media, you know, we're all saying Romney swept Wisconsin, Romney swept it. Well, 550,000 people voted because I counted it in the paper after the next day. So what kind of a sweep is that when there's over 5 million people in the state? People are not interested in the Republican Party. So it's like, why vote? And I'd like a comment on that if I'm all wrong or if this is just the way it's done.
But all right. Thank you very much, Diane. It might be that he swept not only Wisconsin, but Maryland and Washington, D.C., but I'll let Chris comment on that.
Yeah, and I guess I don't really agree with the caller's premise. I don't know if she's trying to take a shot at Mitt Romney or what, but, you know, the turnout was lower than the Government Accountability Board expected. I think they predicted somewhere in the range of 35% turnout, and the turnout was actually nearly 25%. And I think there are a few factors for that. I mean, frankly, I think some Republicans are not thrilled with the choices they have this year. You know, I'm not completely enamored of the choices we had this year. I think a lot of Republicans are in the same boat. I think they see Mitt Romney as the front runner, but they were kind of kicking the tires on a number of other candidates. So I think that has something to do with it. I think for sure the whole recall process and the recall of Governor Walker is really sucking all the political oxygen out of the room. Mm-hmm. I mean, people just aren't paying as much attention to the presidential race. And we saw, you know, news reports to that effect in recent weeks that you have Republican activists admitting that they really haven't been engaged in the presidential race. I mean, it's all about the recall at this point. You know, people haven't been paying attention as much to the upcoming U.S. Senate race. And I know this from direct experience. You know, Wisconsin is at the epicenter of a major political battle right now. Unfortunately, it hasn't necessarily been for Republicans the presidential race. It's been the recall race.
Yeah. So has the recall sucked all the oxygen out of the room, Peg?
I think in some ways it has. I agree with Chris. I don't know. It must be something in the water today.
Yeah, what's going on?
Chris, I don't know. But I mean, I do think you've got two things. One is you've got people who are tired. They're tired of watching the presidential stuff. They're tired of you know, having to figure out what the heck's happening with government these days, and you know, where did we take this turn that nobody was expecting. So I think there's that. You know, another really practical consideration too is this recall election came during the week that most schools in the state had spring break.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of families, particularly with the weather as nice as it's been this year, probably weren't home, probably were busy, probably were focused on something else. But yes, I do think that, you know, the sort of continual, you know, there's a certain fatigue I think that's out there because of, you know, this constant kind of news barrage of, okay, you know, this week it's Gingrich, this week it's Bachman, this week it's whatever, and people are kind of saying, like, okay, so, you know, what does this really mean? Does this really matter?
Peg, is the state Democratic Party being silly or not, filing a complaint with the Government Accountability Board over Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan giving away free subs at a sub shop?
I think think absolutely not. And, you know, I mean, I recall, and I think it was 2000 when we had this issue where, you know, homeless people were getting cigarettes when they were going to vote before they were voting by the Gore for President committee. You know, admittedly, a sandwich is probably a little healthier than a cigarette, so I'm not sure if the cigarette's something of value. But, you know, we've seen this kind of thing in the past, and historically the Government Accountability Board, the Elections Board before it, took a pretty, you know, strict stand, a dollar's a dollar, and, you know, we aren't going to put up with this because it becomes a slippery slope. And so from that standpoint, I think, you know, we've seen this happen in the past. We've seen it with both parties, and I'm just surprised because I think, you know, while Mitt Romney maybe doesn't recognize that about a Wisconsin election law, I would think Paul Ryan would.
Subs for votes, Chris Lotto.
Yeah. Well, Peg's right. I mean, and that's the first thing I thought of when I saw this was the infamous Smokes for Votes case, and that was in 2000, and that was a Democrat operative, you know, in this case caught on a TV camera giving homeless people cigarettes after giving them a ride to the local polling place. Now, you know, the difference is that Connie Milstein back in 2001 paid a civil fine for doing that. I think it was $5,000. I'll give the Democrats points for trying here, but, you know, let's get real. I think it's highly unlikely that anything is going to come of this beyond a quickie headline or two. I think that the idea that the presidential front runner and one of the nation's top congressional Republicans would take part in a photo op like this without it being fully vetted is fairly ridiculous. So I don't see much coming of this.
So, Chris Lotto, does the Waukesha County Clerk, Kathy Nicholas, have to resign over another election night snafu with vote tallying? She did yesterday, under some pressure, step aside from election night duties.
Yeah, well, I mean, she is elected, so it really would be up to her, I think, at this point to say that she's stepping down. I think, you know, the whole thing that's going on in Waukesha County is absolutely bizarre. I mean, it is, and it looks bad, and there's really, I haven't seen any good excuse for it. You know, to his credit, the county executive there, Dan Varakis, on Thursday announced that he was getting involved. He put the pressure on her. I think when a fellow Republican sees the need to start cracking the whip, you know, it's a sign that Republicans are recognizing just how damaging this situation has become. You know, we have recall elections coming up right around the corner, and this is something that needs to be dealt with. You know, not that there's any question that Waukesha County is going to run up huge numbers in support of Scott Walker, but, you know, I think it's County Executive Varakis's actions this week are very telling. And Kathy Nicholas's, you know, willingness to step aside is perhaps a recognition of that. Now, where she goes from here is anybody's guess. But, yeah, it's a bad situation. It's a weird situation. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but it's got to get cleaned up.
Well, and Chris, I think it was a year ago we were both on here after the Prosser-Klobenberg election. I believe you were the guest with me, and we were discussing, you know, how the county board in Waukesha County also pretty much, you know, a Republican kind of board was concerned about her actions even then. You know, it needs to stop. And states are the ones that are responsible for ensuring fair elections. And so you can't have a renegade county out there with somebody who refuses to abide by the rules which everyone else follows.
Yeah. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, in an editorial saying she should resign or step down, also said that this is a position that probably does not need to be elected and should be appointed quickly. Peg, do you think that's the case?
You know, I don't know if it should be elected or appointed. There are always the debates about any of these kinds of positions that really don't have a partisan connection and whether or not we should do that. I mean, we are a different culture and society, and our elections are different than they were 100 years ago. But, you know, whether it be the sheriff, whether it be the district attorney, the clerk of courts, the county clerk, you know, there are always going to be questions as to whether or not that partisan label which is placed on someone during election season is something the elected official can overcome when faced with his or her duties to all people in the state. Mm-hmm. And this is certainly one of those situations where, you know, the situation where it's become so egregious that, you know, it's people of her own party who are concerned about what's going on.
Should we continue electing our county clerks, Chris Lotto?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a a rather extreme and kind of alarmist position to take.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that Kathy Nicholas is probably the exception rather than the rule. I mean, we have, you know, clerks in counties across Wisconsin elected, you know, both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, who are able to do their jobs on election night effectively. And I think that that's, you know, Kathy Nicholas, there's no reason to go ahead and change the system.
Well, and we see in the city model where people are appointed that just because you're appointed doesn't mean you're not partisan. And in some ways, I think, you know, the flip side, Joy, is that you don't have the check and balance of the electorate if you have an appointed person. And sometimes that causes more trouble than somebody who's at least accountable to the voters.
Well, and yet again, I can't believe I'm saying I'm agreeing with Peg, but here it is. I mean, she's right. It is an issue of accountability, and the idea that you would take a position like that and turn it into a political patronage job raises a whole other host of issues here. So I think it feels better to let the people decide on this. And then, you know, when the next election comes along, if they're not happy with the way that person is performing his or her duties, you vote them out.
Well, we have a caller who wants to talk about a different set of results on election night. Dave in Wanakee, hello.
Yes, hello. I thought there was a big Scott Walker effect in the election because three of his appointed judges were defeated. And in addition, the Dane Board of Supervisors picked up five progressive seats over conservatives, so they have a 28-32-9 majority. And I think it's due to Scott Walker, because this occurred during a low turnout Republican primary.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, Dave. Well, Peg, what do you say about that?
I think that's probably got some validity. I think, you know, voters tend to move toward the middle, and when anything goes from too far to one side or the other, we've seen it mostly going toward the political right, I think, in the last decades, people kind of search for the middle or search for a counterbalance. And I think in some of the local races, not all but some, you've seen people looking for the more moderate candidates, looking for people who articulate a different point of view. And I think that's human nature. I think you saw it play out in this election cycle.
Yeah, I was aware of two judges, I guess. Three Walker appointees were defeated, Chris Lotto. Is that concerning to you?
Without being aware of the specifics in each and every one of those elections, I'd be reluctant to mm-hmm. draw a conclusion like what the caller did. I mean, I do think that there is going to be, I mean, certainly unsurprisingly in Dane County, that there's going to be some collateral damage from Scott Walker's controversial stances. So, I mean, the idea that the county board is electing progressives in Dane County is, you know, hardly something to ring the alarm bells about. But, I think in general, look, Scott Walker is a lightning rod right now, and this is the kind of thing that's only going to be heating up in the next couple of months. I mean, it's already been at pretty much a full boil for the last year, and the next couple of months are going to be intense. I mean, people are going to be, you know, pummeled with ads. We're back in an election cycle, whether we like it or not, and the spring election, in some cases, there may have been some indicators about pockets of dissatisfaction. If we're going to talk about recall election, I still think Scott Walker is going to win re-election, but, there is obviously parts of the state that are not supportive of where he's at.
And something else we didn't mention on this, Joy, is that the negative ads, while they so-called, you know, although the conventional wisdom is they work, they've also been shown to drive down voter turnout. And I think, you know, we saw so many negative ads. We saw so many, you know, negative phone calls. I mean, the robocalls. I thought Rick Santorum was stalking me or something. Sometimes he called me four times a day, you know. And I think that that kind of negativism is something, too, that impacted these sorts of races.
Let me take our break, and then we'll continue talking about the top news stories of the week during this edition of our Week in Review. Today, our guests are Peg Lautenschlager, an attorney with the law firm of Bauer and Bach, former Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin, and Chris Lotto, a Republican campaign consultant, former communications director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It's time for the Week in Review quiz. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. And this week, our quiz question is a simple game of Name That Sound. We are going to play a short soundbite for you. and then you tell us what it is. Listen carefully. All right, that was a little difficult to hear. Let's play that one more time. All right, there we go. Name that sound. It's in the news this week. If you are correct, we will randomly be selecting a winner from all of the correct answers, and you will win a book that was featured on the program recently. Here's the number to call if you want to guess what that sound that was in the news, what that was. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is our Week in Review. We will get to all of the latest in recall politics in just a moment, but there's still a couple of national issues that I wanted to touch on. And I think I'm going to let Janice in La Crosse bring up this subject. Hello, Janice.
Yes, hello. Good morning, Joy, and to your guests. And just a quick comment that I think people are so discouraged with our government right now. I'm Catholic, I'm Republican, and I really want to see Obama go and turn this country around. I don't believe I'm having to deal with Obamacare, and I hope that the Supreme Court has enough sense to throw it out as unconstitutional, to be paying for abortions and contraceptives. It completely goes against my faith, and truthfully, I really would go to jail for that. So I can't believe I'm even having to talk about something like that. So
thank you, Janice. I didn't mean to cut you off there, but let me bring our guests in on the conversation. Chris Lotto, you referred to the health care issue earlier in the program. This week, President Obama said, essentially paraphrasing, that he did not think that the U.S. Supreme Court was going to rule his health care plan unconstitutional as it was passed by a majority of Congress. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what Peg has to say about this, because I think what the president said was pretty extraordinary. I mean, wasn't he once a constitutional law professor? I think some of the things he said this week, you know, he knows better. I think more than anything, it's pretty clear that this is a political statement, and he's sending some signals here to liberals across the country, and I think he's laying the groundwork for the health care mandate to potentially go down in flames, and I think he needs a scapegoat, and one of the scapegoats is going to be the Supreme Court. I think he's, you know, firing a shot across the bow in a pretty threatening manner here. I mean, you had this week with the arguments before the Supreme Court, you had a court analyst, Jeff Toobin, on CNN, and he's no Obama hater, say that the administration's arguments in support of Obamacare were, in his words, a train wreck. It did not go well for the administration this week. And, you know, the president's, statements about, unelected judges making a decision and overturning, you know, a law enacted by Congress, I mean, that it would be an extraordinary and unprecedented thing. I mean, I think that's absurd on its face and easily disproven. Mm-hmm. You know, the High Court has overturned dozens and dozens of federal, state, local laws. You know, the president claimed this week in his remarks that Obamacare was enacted by a strong majority. What? I mean, in the House, Democrats had a 75-seat majority when the vote was taken. Obamacare was passed by 7 votes. That is hardly a strong majority. You know, I think when the president is talking about the High Court, he argued this week that there is a, quote, human element at stake here. I think that raises a red flag. I think it's kind of part of his effort to sort of sidestep the rule of law, sidestep the checks and balances that the Supreme Court is meant to uphold, and really draw the head versus the heart battle lines that that liberals are going to try and wage this year.
Is that what
president is going for? Emotion. He's not going for whether this, you know, passes the rule of law.
Is that what he is doing, Peg?
Let me start with this. Is I think the president went farther on these comments than he has in the past. I do think, though, that these comments are nothing new in the world of politics. I have seen these kinds of comments and the politicization of the courts for it's been almost, it's over 2 decades now. I mean, we have seen an outright effort by people like Karl Rove to elect political judges in various states, started in Texas, places like Alabama, places like West Virginia, places like Wisconsin, and we have seen politicized courts. We have also seen it at the federal level, and we have seen the politics of that play out, not just in terms of appointment of justices, but also in terms of the decisions that are being made by the High Court. So I don't think that Barack Obama's entering into this politicized world of the courts is anything unique, and it's not anything that's different from how anybody on either side of the equation has been playing for several decades. So from that standpoint, I think that the hysteria that's coming from the political right is overdone and is political in and of itself. That being said, I think Don Verrilli is one of the nicest guys on feet, as well as one of the smartest guys on feet, and clearly it wasn't his week at the court. And I think everybody has had a time in their professional lives where things just didn't come together, and for him it was probably at a time that was most crucial in his career. But that being said, I do think that there are important arguments here that are not being addressed, and the fundamental one is that unless we decide we are going to be a society where health care is denied to individuals who need care, particularly emergency care, we are going to be paying for health care in some form or another. And so the crucial bottom line here is how do we pay and who pays, and whether or not folks are obligated to pay. And that's something which this I don't want to pay for abortions, to the caller in La Crosse, I believe her name was Janice, you don't pay for abortions. That's just a cut and dry given. Are you paying for contraceptives for some? Yes, you are. Is that maybe against your religion? It might well be. There are plenty of us, and I say us in there, who use contraceptive drugs not for the purpose of contraceptions but for our health. That debate has gotten all out of whack. There are plenty of religions that don't believe in other things as well. There are religions who don't believe in war. I mean, you have Quakers, and yet it's not like you cannot pay your taxes because we're spending lots of money in places like Afghanistan and Iraq. We got to put this in the context of something other than some visceral personal kind of cry that has to do with what an individual thinks he or she should or shouldn't have to pay for. I got plenty of disagreements with things where my tax dollars are going these days, especially in the state of Wisconsin, but that doesn't mean that and some of them I think happen to be moral, some things happen to be religious in nature for others, but this war on something like Obamacare based on those kind of visceral kind of emotions, I think is wrong.
We have just a short time left in this week in review and lots of recall politics to talk about in the state of Wisconsin. It was after our last week's week in review that Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett announced that he is indeed going to run in the primary to find a nominee to run against Scott Walker. Does this change everything, Peg?
I don't think it's unexpected. I mean, I think everybody was sort of waiting to see what Barrett was doing. It's interesting. I mean, you've got a number of people who feel very strongly about the issues that are on the table right now, and I think Barrett is among them. And I think it'll be a good primary, and it'll be one where hopefully it'll be clean, and hopefully we'll produce whoever's the strongest candidate to run against Scott Walker in June.
Your thoughts, Chris Lotto?
Well, I think Peg's hope that it's going to be clean is, I think, already being disproven this week. I mean, it's starting to get bloody immediately, and for the folks on the right, it's going to be fun to watch. I think this is going to be a bloodbath. I think you have big union money that's aligning behind Kathleen Falk. Tom Barrett, according to some reports, deciding to jump into the race in part because he's annoyed by how Falk publicly pushed him to get off the dime and endorse her for governor. You know, I think the fact is that none of these candidates are particularly inspiring, and in their heart of hearts, a lot of Democrats know that there really wasn't a game plan beyond getting the signatures a couple months ago. I mean, statewide, Wisconsin has repeatedly rejected both of these candidates. The others in the race are really hardly worth knowing. I mean, I think it's going to be a clash of the Democrat titans, and, you know, we're seeing things like AFSCME already trotting out an anti-Barrett video that's got Democrats up in arms in some segments. It's going to be nasty.
Yeah, is it going to be nasty, Peg?
I certainly hope not.
Yeah. Chris Lotto, there was a recent poll out that showed Tom Barrett and Scott Walker neck and neck. I mean, and Tom Barrett wasn't even a candidate at the time. That shows that this is going to be a very, very close race.
Yeah, I think, you know, we'll see where things are at after the primary. I don't disagree. I mean, you know, the question of whether the race is going to be close, yeah, I think it may well be. I think we've seen poll after poll indicate that Wisconsin is pretty closely divided. You can't discount the number of recall signatures that were collected and validated. I mean, it obviously shows that there is discontent out there. But I think you also can't discount the fervent passion of Republicans right now who are digging in. They're going to fight tooth and nail to keep Scott Walker governor. And I think that's the passion that's ultimately going to carry the day. Excuse
me. And clearly Wisconsin is, you know, it's more of a 50-50 state than a lot of national political commentators want to recognize. I mean, we've seen that with a number of our elections. I do think, though, that when push comes to shove, you know, we've seen a ton of pro-Walker ads. I'm not a big TV watcher, so I don't see them like some people do. But, you know, we've been hearing about the gospel of Scott Walker now for a number of months. I think, you know, once the Democrats get up and running, we're going to see that counter-argument come to the fore in terms of campaign media and the like. And when that happens, I think what you will see is the number of people in Wisconsin whose lives have been personally affected or loved ones' lives have been personally affected by the extremist politics, which he's decided is a good idea. And I think voters in Wisconsin just don't see that extremism as being a good thing.
Peg, is it against the law for the Republicans to be fielding fake Democrats, which we understand is being done, to make sure there are primaries in all of these recall races?
You know, I don't know. I haven't really done a legal analysis of that, nor if I did, would it necessarily be controlling in terms of is that right or wrong. I think what's more telling there is the notion of we will go this far to manipulate the electoral process at the cost of taxpayers. And is that something which is seen as a good or fair thing? So I think the Republicans run a risk of this. You know, we had one of those races in the 18th state senate district where Jeff King beat Randy Hopper in last year's grouping of recalls, and this notion that a fellow named Mr. Buckstaff, who's since passed away, was running as a Democrat in this primary was very offensive, I think, not just to Democrats, but I think also to a lot of independents and Republicans who were like, why are we going through this drill? And the blatant acknowledgement that it was insincere, I think, made it all the more inappropriate in the minds of many voters. You know, that was a relatively close race in a district that historically has been Republican. I've run in that district once.
Yeah, we have
25 years ago, and I think people said, "What are you doing?" You know,
Chris Lotto, what are the Republicans doing?
Well, look, I mean, you know, all these recalls that the Democrats are seeking are that's a calculated political move as well. They sense weakness, and they're going for the throat.
But we're spending
millions of dollars on a gubernatorial recall. This idea that Republicans by fronting a few candidates is a waste of resources is absurd. We're seeing a multi-million-dollar waste of resources at the state level.
Well,
look, this is a tactical move. It's a political move. It's forcing the Democrats to face a primary in a way to protest the recalls as well. I mean, we're seeing a waste of taxpayer resources with this unprecedented number of election do-overs, and Republicans are making it clear they're not going to take that line down.
I'm afraid we'll have to leave it there, Peg. I'm sorry, we have less than a minute to go, and I need to announce the winner of the Week in Review quiz and wrap things up. Take a listen to this. Do you know what that sound is, Chris or Peg?
I have no idea.
Okay. That's funny. Yeah, it was a guy caught on tape. He was a student from the Madison Area Technical College. He went up to Clintonville, and he picked up weird booms that have been going on in Clintonville, and that's apparently what it sounds like. And then he said the earth was shaking after he heard that sound. The federal officials are investigating. I understand, Peg, you're heading over to Milwaukee to go to the opener.
I absolutely am. So it'll be fun. I haven't been there in a few seasons.
Go Brewers. Chris Lotto, are you going there too?
No, I'm not. Just going to enjoy Easter weekend with the family. So right. Have fun at the game, Peg.
Yeah, all right.
I will. Okay.
Have great weekends. Thanks very much for being with us. Peg Lautenschlager and Chris Lotto are our guests today for the Weekend Review. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, too. Talk to you again on Monday. We'll have more state politics in our state capitol report on Monday morning from 7 until 8. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.